This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Hi, it's Mike Moore, and Carol Lawrence is away for the weekend. A nice extended couple days away for her. She'll be back on Monday on Food for Thought, 107.7 The Pulse, WTPL. And Food for Thought is brought to you by New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com. And one of our favorite places to eat over on the west side, Casey's Rib Shack, famous Hickory Smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester. Kevin Cornish, the owner, not only a wonderful and hospitable culinary force in this town, but also a heck of a guitar player and singer, which I just recently found out after seeing some of his posts on Facebook. So we do hope to have him on a future summer series Friday out here on Beacon Street. I'm sorry, on Elm Street in front of the Beacon Building, so that he might also play for us as well if he is so inclined. We're actually just down the street from City Hall Plaza, where there's a fair amount of busking that goes on from time to time, and he would fit in perfectly, but he doesn't have to put out a bucket for money. He's doing just fine. Want to let you know, in the week ahead, some of the shows with Carol and Mike include Monday, of course, is Healthy Monday. Rocco Boulay is in, and Randy Clements, a recent transplant from California, is here. He's an expert on sriracha, but he is also very, very well versed in healthy eating. So we've added him to the stable every couple of weeks. And from Manchester Food Co-op, Steve Freeman will be joining us as well on Monday. The rest of the week includes local favorite John Clayton, another terrific writer, Dan Sesney, who's going to talk to us a little bit about Nepalese food.
Oh, interesting.
He's married to a woman from Nepal, and so he's become somewhat involved in that. So we try to cover as many continents as we can over the course of one period. And today we're on the continent of Elm Street in front of Beacon Building.
Indeed, intercontinental almost.
It is. He's Michael Hopley-Pierce. He's our go-to guy with all things having to do with craft brew and craft beers. And I've learned a lot. He does a podcast called The Tap Handle Show. It's not been around that long, but boy, you've managed to pull a nice following in your short time on the internet.
Yeah, we're just about at our 18-month mark. We started out the show doing every week, and then both my partner Tim, who actually conceptualized the show, and I have gotten busier and busier, and we had to either cut back on quality or cut back on quantity, and we figured it was better to cut back on quantity. So we now do a show every other week. It's at least an hour, often closer to an hour and a half. We interview local and international brewers, distillers, beer folk. We look at some beer news items. We look a little bit at some simple home brewing tips, a little bit at some simple style guidelines to help you identify what you might like, what you've had before and why you liked it, and how to find other things like it or to avoid things like it in the future. And then we close every show with the Jukebox, which is music from unsigned artists. We've had everybody from Ed Gerhard from the Seacoast, who's a Grammy winner.
Oh, I love him, yeah.
Yeah,
With that flowing white hair.
Yeah, he's
what
a buddy of mine.
What a great guitarist.
Yeah, I call myself an Ed head. I've been following him for
about
15
years. I wish I'd known that. I would have invited him here today to play for. I don't know if he would do that, but
I can reach out to him, too. Maybe we can do the sort of the double-barreled approach and see if we can get him to come out here and join us sometime.
That would be fun.
But we've had Danish hip-hop. I've got a buddy that's got he's a beat maker and rapper in Denmark, so we've done the whole spectrum of music, and kind of a nice way to sort of tie off the end of the show and give some folks some promotional opportunity that doesn't cost them anything.
Well, clearly, I would say that all things beer and all the things, the tentacles that come out from it, probably your first love. Of course, you can't quite fully, I suppose, support your habit of eating and shelter and everything that way. But I would imagine that in a perfect world, as much as you may love your current paying job, this would be something you would love to probably do all the time, full time.
Yeah, for sure. I do really dig my day job. I mm-hmm. like how I get to sell to folks and what I get to sell. I'm passionate about my product, which is granite. But yeah, sure, this is a burgeoning world, and I'm really sort of on the crest of the wave of what's happening in New Hampshire, and I think starting to get some recognition from my various endeavors, and it's really cool the opportunities that are presenting themselves to me, including this show.
Well, you're certainly all about more than just beer, as we found out. You were a foodie before. You were a wine fan, and of course, eventually beer. But that's the topic, at least tomorrow, if you're in Manchester, and maybe you don't even know about this. Summerfest is happening, presented by the Granite State Brewers Association, to showcase all the excellent beers that are made in New Hampshire. I don't know how many breweries there are, craft brew people in this state, Michael. Do you have any idea?
I know the number is creeping to 40 if it hasn't reached there already as far as the total number of breweries. Now, obviously, we've got a couple of big boys. We've got the InBev Anheuser-Busch plant in Merrimack, and then there's some substantial-sized breweries that have been around for a while. Smutty Nose for sure, Red Hook. But then as far as craft folks, most of those other breweries are fairly recent. It seems like about 36 to 24 months ago was the first big wave.
It's been that big of a growth spurt?
Well, what happened was in 2011, the legislation got changed and created a new tier of taxation and pretty much classification for really small breweries called the Nano Brew Act. And that opened up a couple of possibilities breweries didn't have before. The first and foremost was that they can self-distribute, which is huge for them to be able to deliver their own product and not have to pay a middleman. You know, those guys bring value to the equation for the big brewers, but the small guys that have the time and the ability to promote their own product, that's powerful. And the second piece that they were allowed to sell samples and growlers in their own tasting rooms, which also made it more attractive because obviously your margins are higher if you're doing in your own tasting room. And the license is fairly inexpensive. I think it's $150. I mean, you still have to pay federal and state tax, but as far as entry level from a governmental standpoint, they made it about as easy as possible.
All right, so you just mentioned this new legislation that made it possible for the little guys to actually go out on their own, meet face-to-face, distribute their product to each restaurant client they might have. And I think one good case in point would be Abel Ebenezer Brewing in Merrimack with Kyle Soderberg. He's kind of the guy that goes out and makes that first impression and connection and follows up. And I think they're approaching 50 retail outlets.
Yeah, I actually just saw one of their vans go by about 2 minutes ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I missed it.
I think it was probably their Renaissance man, Jake, who does a lot of their deliveries as well. I didn't see the big beard that Carl has usually.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, they're a perfect example of a brewery that could have never existed previous to this legislation, where they couldn't sell samples in their showroom and they couldn't deliver their own kegs to restaurants. And with what you need to pay distribution, you have to quadruple your output in order to touch the same, you know, level of margin that you could do by yourself. So it's not necessarily a scalable jump for everybody to make without upgrading your entire equipment setup.
Sure. So 3 dozen plus brewers in any event here in New Hampshire. We're geographically a pretty small space. How many of these do we expect tomorrow for the Big Brew Fest?
I think there's about 32 that are coming. I believe almost everybody in the state is going to be here. And my understanding is exclusive to New Hampshire breweries that there will not be any folks from out of state here. There'll also be live music. There's going to be a chicken wing contest. And this year, this is only the second year they've done the festival. There's actually quite a few non-brewer folks that will be displaying their wares or making people aware of their services, including the Tap Handle Show. We'll also have Hophead United, Seth Simonian will have a table set up. Marie Chantal from the Beerkery will have a table set up. Granite, what's the other? There's a bunch of folks that are going to be sort of in a little alcove of non-brewers, but people that are ancillary services. And that's one of the cool things about seeing this growth happen in the industry is all these ancillary industries that sort of spring up around it. And it's not just the malt producers, which we're seeing local, and the hop producers, which we're also seeing local recently, but people that do podcasts, people that have bakeries that bake with just beer, people that are a marketing arm for the craft beer industry or an advocacy group. It's really cool to see that all happening from a ground up sort of grassroots level.
So the question is, you started to mention some of the ingredients in beer. Is New Hampshire's climate friendly to all the things that we need to make craft beer?
Yes and no. So much of hops are a lot like grapes, that they've been differentiated down to really distinct varieties so much that some varieties will grow well here and some won't, and they all produce totally different flavors and levels of bitterness. Rye grows well in New Hampshire. I don't think barley grows quite so well. I think you get a little bit further west. I know that Western Massachusetts and New York produces a lot of grains, and there actually is a maltster, so somebody that takes grain and malts it and makes it ready for brewing in Hadley, Massachusetts. And I just got a news article that a new one opened up, I believe, just outside of Portland, Maine. So people are getting more varieties of locally malted grain available. And then Isinglass Hops is they're somewhere in the process of developing a hop processing facility in New Hampshire, which is something that we do not have here, and it's quite price intensive. It's not cheap to do.
So tomorrow it's Summerfest, a showcase of the excellent beers that Michael Hopley Pierce has been speaking about. It begins at 1, but if you are interested in getting a VIP hour designation, it costs you a little bit more. You'll also probably get a better parking space. So give us a little bit of information about the some of the factoids about tomorrow's event.
So this is our second annual Summerfest. It's put on by the Granite State Brewers Association, which its membership includes most of the breweries in the state. There'll be food vendors and local music. The VIP parking is $15. Designated driver is $20, and $30 for general admission, $40 for VIP. VIPs get in at 12. Everyone gets in at 1, and the event runs until 5 p.m. That VIP entrance will give you the ability to, there's going to be some limited release stuff. Maybe people will bring one little keg of something, or maybe even just some bottles of something special in addition to what they'll be serving all day. That'll be a great opportunity to be able to try that stuff, and also probably to engage with the brewers before they start to get bombarded with the rest of the folks, because I anticipate there'll be a few thousand people here. It's going to be a very well-attended event.
Well, I haven't been to Arms Park today, and typically I would guess tents, if there will be some going up, or does each brewer have to bring their own little self-pop-up tent?
Last year there was a tent for all the brewers, a big probably 30 by 60 tent, okay. And everybody else, like, I was one of the only two non-brewers. I had to set up my own tent. Kettle the Keg Homebrew Supply set up right next to me, and we were the only non-brewers there. This year, I think we still have to set up our own tents as non-brewers, but everybody who's licensed to sell or dispense beer will all be under one common tent, I believe.
All right, so you're going to have access to all these people that for the most part, you know, either to varying degrees. Will you be doing any podcasting tomorrow? Any interviews with the people there?
I may. I've got my little portable recording unit. I'm anticipating it's going to be a lot of crowd noise in the background. I did bring the recording set up last year and wasn't able to really capture
which
anything.
Actually can add a lot of energy to a podcast as long as the levels are balanced.
Right, and I found that I was right next to the band, and it was tough. I captured some great music, but I didn't get a lot of actual voice.
It wasn't Rush, was it?
No. They did 2112 all the way through, man.
We are the priests.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. So that's all happening tomorrow. It starts at 1, but at noon is actually the VIP.
And come by and see me. We'll be having a good time. I'll be at my booth the whole time, and I'd love to chat with you and find out what you've got going on in your beer world.
So how does one navigate their way through, you know, 36 or 30 or whatever it is? And you got to pace yourself, don't you? Because I know as far as food goes, when we have in-town Manchester's big food night in September, typically after seven or eight places of just a few bites, I can't eat anymore. Yeah. And I'm sure alcohol is the same way for pacing.
Yeah, for sure, except the end result can be a lot more dramatic if you overpace yourself, I think.
Well, yeah.
It's tough. You kind of, generally when I've done these events in the past, and I've been hosting a table at these for a while, so I haven't generally had a chance to walk around and really take advantage of what's there, you kind of do a quick walk around and say, okay, I know that I want to check these guys out. They've got something that really interests me, and then sort of prioritize and hit up the stuff you really want to get first. And then from there, just sort of make sure that you're doing, got a bottle of water in one hand and you're hitting it up constantly to keep yourself sort of balanced.
That's a really, really good point. I haven't really checked the weather to see how it's going to be tomorrow. I hope that it's favorable. I think either way, the fans of good craft brew and local production are going to want to be there. It doesn't matter what the weather's going to be.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. It might put a damper on a little bit, but I don't anticipate that much.
So I'm thinking, because you grew up in wine country and I think you have really good knowledge of that. What is it, Onophile? Is that what
yes.
One person is? All right, so you probably saw the movie Sideways.
I have not,
all right,
actually.
So that is your assignment the next time you have an hour and a half. And it's all about wine country and two guys, their final hurrah, single men, and they basically visit a lot of various wine facilities. And, of course, they have the big bar where you get to sample the wine, and then they have the spit bowl, which you see at all kinds of wine events here. That doesn't exist in beer, does it? I mean, typically, if you have a 2 or a 1 ounce pour, you're going to drain it all.
Generally, yeah.
Yeah.
What you do see is that if you're doing a tasting event where you're sitting down and you have multiple courses, or you're tasting this beer after this beer after this beer, you might not finish what you have in your cup, and you might pour it into a rinse basin and then rinse your glass out for the next beer so you get a sort of a fresh taste of it. But I've never seen anybody spitting beer out unless it was horrible.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen too much.
No. What's the strangest beer you've ever had in terms of just the general ingredients, the taste, or whatever?
Personally? Well, the strangest beer I've ever heard of was made in Iceland, and it was actually made with smoked whale testicles.
I'm so glad I asked.
Well, that's jurisprudence 101. Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to, right?
I never expected that answer, but go ahead.
Well, I think that between whale being a traditional food item, and also the fact that in a country like Iceland, they probably do a lot of smoking to preserve food. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as such an odd juxtaposition of ingredients. As far as things that I've actually ever had, That's a tough one. I made a beer that was awful, but it was made with all local ingredients. I chicory root from my backyard, wild carrot seed from my own backyard locally, malted grain, hops from a friend's backyard. It was the back 40, and it was not a well-balanced beer, but there were certainly some odd ingredients in that. I think what we're seeing now is that people are really pushing the limits of odd ingredients, but they're trying to do it in a way that doesn't hit you over the head with it. You know, people were using really odd ingredients for a long time where it would be a flavor impact that would almost be too much to get past. And I think now people realize that it's the subtlety that matters. You know, you can make an oyster stout, and it doesn't have to taste like you just had an oyster shooter. It can add a layer of subtlety to the beer that you may not be able to put a finger on, but will still be pleasing. And I think that's kind of the direction that people who are using interesting ingredients are going, because you get a six-pack of something that's that flavor-forward, and you may only want to drink one of them.
Flavor-forward. Okay, there's a new term that I learned today.
The goal is to make something drinkable. My opinion as a brewer is I want to make a beer that you're going to want to order another one of. So you have one of my beers at a bar, and you finish it, and you say, I'll take another one of those. That's the goal, right?
Now, you're a brewer, but not a commercial brewer?
Correct. I am in a transitional phase right now where we are in the process of opening up a commercial brewery. We anticipate will be open first quarter of next year. We had a location and it fell through due to some issues with the town. So we kind of had to, at the 11th hour, regroup and find a new location. So we're looking at a couple of spots in the greater Concord area, and I anticipate that we'll have about next 45 days we'll have a lease in place.
It's very exciting. And are you in a position to give us what the name of the...
Oh, absolutely. It is Litherman's Limited, Litherman's Limited.
And you're wearing that shirt today.
And I'm wearing the short. Right. My logo work was done by Steve Lee. He's awesome. He does all my graphic stuff. So we have a Facebook page. You can find us at Litherman's.beer.
It's hard to say.
It is. Well, there's a back. Do we have time for a quick backstory?
We do, absolutely.
So my partner, Doc Jones, and I actually started out as a hip-hop group. Just to add yet another...
Hip-hop as in music or hops as in beer?
As in music. Okay. Yeah, we were a rap group, just because I didn't have quite enough bohemian credibility to start with. So we had actually met. He was my sales rep when I was working for the Home Depot. He was working for a power tool company. We got to hanging out and drinking beer, and we decided we were going to start making some music together. So we did that for a couple of years as Litherman's Load. And Litherman's Load is an archaic phrase that I found in an archaic phrase a day calendar.
Oh, boy.
I am also that guy. And it was a phrase from the 1300s in England that meant when you carry so much that it's counterproductive. So I think the modern analog is when you get home with all your groceries, instead of making three trips into the house, you try to load yourself down with every single bag, and you're tripping over the cat and the steps, and you're fighting with the door, and the bags are breaking and stuff's dropping, and you could have done it better in two or three trips, but you needed to do it in one. That's a Litherman's Load. So when we segged from being a hip-hop group to a brewery, we became Litherman's Limited, just kind of to put a finer point on it. And we were brewing as Litherman's Limited as homebrewers for 4 or 5 years before we really got serious about making the switch to going commercial. And we ran some projections. We looked at what was happening in the state. We made some contact with some of the retailers and barkeeps and found out that not only was there a market receptive to us, but that the numbers worked. And so we are in the process of opening. It's going to be very part-time. We say that now. It's going to be very part-time, still keeping our day jobs for quite foreseeable future. But really interesting to see where this could go.
All right, so most brewers on this level don't get into it thinking that it's going to be a full-time, you know, it's going to be the next Smutty Nose or the next, Jim Cook and Sam Adams situation. I mean, it could. But it's because you love it so much and are so into it that's first and foremost. And that should be the reason, I suppose, for everything in life, that you should do what you love. And, oh, by the way, if it accelerates and makes you a lot of money, wonderful.
Right. And that's kind of where I am now, is neither of us plan on taking a paycheck from this for several years. Everything's going to go right back into the business and build it as much as we can. So we're not depending on it to put food on our table right now. When it gets to the point where it can easily do that, then we'll probably take advantage of that opportunity. But for right now, it's going to be a hobby that we treat like a job.
Terrific. All right. Litherman's Limited. Watch for it. Coming to a facility near you, hopefully within the next year or so. So we have gone from a few sprinkles at noon to pretty much a lot of sunshine and a nice breeze and plenty of traffic and a beautiful day on Elm Street. We're in front of the Beacon Building at 814 Elm. We do the show downstairs normally. Carol is away today. Michael Hopley-Pierce is my co-host. I'm Mike Morin, and when we come back, I need to tell you how the beer that maybe we don't like so much could be in your gas tank tomorrow with Brutroleum. How weird is that, huh?
As long as my car doesn't have to drive itself after drinking beer, I don't want anyone to have to do a breathalyzer.
All right. Well, there you go. Deal. So we'll be right back. Food for Thought, WTPL The Pulse.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hello, everybody. It's Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL The Pulse. Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence is away today. She's back on Monday. Michael Hopley-Pierce is joining for the next few moments. We wrap up another week on Food for Thought. All right, so the theme has been beer, which is a subject near and dear to your heart, stomach, and liver.
I'm getting misty.
Stop. So here we go. New Zealand beer company DB Export may have just invented another way to love beer. Earlier this year, DB Export set out on a mission to turn beer into a biofuel that can be used to power cars. Simon Smith is a spokesman for DB Export, and he says a few guys having a few beers came up with the idea back in February. Now, 5 months later, at Gull petrol stations across New Zealand, drivers can fill their cars with DB Export Brewtrolium, which is made from the leftover yeast found in fermented beer, better known as
Trub.
Slurry. That's what this says here. Probably the same thing. This is a different country. The yeast slurry is passed on to farmers for stock feed, but sometimes it can go to waste. When DB Export realized they could turn the wasted slurry into ethanol, a central ingredient in biofuel, they sent 15,500 gallons of slurry to a refinery to purify it until it could be mixed into petrol.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
And you have a chemistry background in college. So does any of that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, pretty much you can distill anything that's had alcoholic fermentation, and you can get fairly pure ethanol up to 95%. You can get it purer than that using other than fractional distillation methods. But that's what the whole Brazilian economy runs on as far as their fuel. It's all ethanol. Most of it's from sugar cane, I think. But it's all from fermenting bio goods and then isolating the ethanol from it and using it to power vehicles. So it makes sense. I don't know if they're using the yeast to do anything or if they're actually somehow cracking the yeast and getting ethanol out of it versus having it produce it.
Putting it in an atom smasher, I think.
I mean, they have these home biodiesel setups where for $3,500 you can take cooking oil and it actually cracks the molecules down to what you want. So that may be some kind of a process like that. I'm not quite sure, but it does sound interesting. I've certainly had a few beers that I'd like to pour into my tank.
DB Export recently made 79,000 gallons of the Brewtrolium biofuel, which is expected to last about 6 weeks, depending on how people like it. But so far, Simon said, it has gone off with a bang. So I'm not sure what adjustments you need with the carburation or, you know, like our cars, we've adjusted to the corn ethanol from the Midwest.
Right. I think it's E15 now. So you could do 15% ethanol without changing your gaskets or your injectors. But I think if you get beyond 15%, you got to change out gaskets for stuff that's less of a swellable polymer. And you have to adjust the carburation for different, you know, combustibility, I think.
See, prior to today, I didn't realize you had somewhat of a chemistry background. But as it turns out, it came in handy today.
I'm a wealth of useless knowledge.
We're broadcasting at 814 Elm Street, Beacon Building, and we are actually partly taking up some of the front window real estate of Groland Communications, the computer technology experts, and we thank them for not making us roll our little cart a few feet away to be exclusively in front of the Midtown Cafe. Tuna salad wrap, I see now the only thing left on the special board today, so the other items, the lobster chowder, and there was something else. That
86 the lobster chowder!
Yeah, is now sold out. A beer-themed menu sounds delightfully magical. In a collaboration between Buffalo Wild Wings, which we know is they're now, I think, in the Mall of New Hampshire.
Yes.
Which is a big nationwide company. Buffalo Wild Wings and Boston Beer Company, the Chicken Wing Restaurant is creating an alcohol-inspired menu for summer. The menu includes 4 new menu items and a chicken wing sauce. And here they are. Beer cheese dippers are pretzel bites, kettle or tortilla chips served with an Oktoberfest-inspired cheese dip. The Boston Lager Burger is made with a simple burger served with red onions, Swiss cheese, and button mushrooms braised with Sam Adams Boston Lager. And Angry Orchard Fiery Applesauce, made with Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey and Angry Orchard Hard Cider, available for a limited time on the wing menu. On the healthier note, Should we even bother?
You can skip that on my behalf.
The Rebel Flatbed Caesar is a chicken flatbread topped with a Sam Adams Rebel IPA dressing. The Angry Orchard Peach Chicken Sandwich features a peach salsa that's pickled with vinegar and Angry Orchard hard cider. The items will be available for a limited time through August at all participating Buffalo Wild Wings locations.
That's interesting. When I hadn't really noticed them as a restaurant brand before maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and probably just because they weren't in the Northeast, but their first ads were definitely focused on the macro beers, and they actually kind of slighted craft beer and homebrew drinkers as far as this is not where you want to go if that's the kind of beer you want. And they've recently turned their around. I think they had to smarten up a little bit and realize that they were alienating a piece of their demographic, and you can still please the bud drinkers, but there are people like me in the world, and we have money to spend on beer when we go out, you know. And recently, actually, Abel Ebenezer has gotten on tap with them at the Mall of New Hampshire. So that's a nice sign that they've sort of not only accepted craft beer, but local craft beer, because I think that's a big draw for folks.
Well, if you said that the size of the number of local craft brewers in the state in the last couple of years has swelled dramatically, I mean, they've got to feel that kind of pressure, I would guess, on behalf of their patrons.
For sure, and a lot of the breweries that are local are either not doing draft lines because kegs are expensive. Not only is the equipment to put stuff in kegs in the brewery expensive, but the kegs themselves are 100 plus a piece, and you need 5 kegs for every draft line you have. So you're going to spend between $500 and $700 just to establish one draft line for a low margin product. So it's tough for small breweries to get into what they call cooperage or barrels. It's easier to do bottles, but a lot of bars and restaurants don't want to serve 22-ounce bottles, which is sort of what the craft go-to has been. I think that's changing, and the fact that cans are becoming a more acceptable packaging method for quality beer is becoming known, kind of like the plastic cork or the screw top was in wine 10 years ago, where people are realizing it's actually better for the product. It might not be traditional, but it makes better liquid that comes out at the end by using a can than by using a bottle. Just like doing a plastic cork or a screw top for a wine bottle, they're going to keep better. They're not going to get oxygen. They're not going to get corked. So I think as you see that the cans and 22s are becoming more understood as a legitimate way to sell beer, that more bottle shops or more bars and restaurants, rather, will start to have that. But still, it's mostly draft lines that when restaurants think about how they sell beer, that's where they make their margin. It's because you're selling a pint for $6. You're probably paying $1.20 for it. So it's definitely better for them than the bottles. And Abel is one of the few folks, I think, that can actually sustain 50 draft lines without being one of the big boys that's been around for a long time. So they're in a really unique position. They were very smart to put themselves there.
Yeah, I was up visiting them a couple of weeks ago, and they pretty much did a lot of the hands-on work that needed to go into that place, including digging the drainage troughs and the cement and everything else.
Oh yeah, it was interesting to watch their progress on Facebook. They're they're army guys. They're problem solvers, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think they necessarily had any kind of training in some of the skills that they needed to call upon. They just looked within themselves and were very resourceful. And I think that's typical of entrepreneurs in general.
And definitely, and specifically brewers, because even as a home brewer, you are not, there's no such thing as a helpless home brewer. Like, you don't get into it if you don't know how to fix your own problems, because you get halfway through a brew session and something stops working and you got to fix it. You can't call your tech department to have them come in and fix it. You better have that MacGyver know-how to at least get through the end of the day, and then maybe you can bring an expert in to fix it long term. So I think a lot of the people that are not able to think on their feet and problem solve, they don't get attracted to brewing, and if they do, they quickly realize it's not their cup of IPA.
All right, now, just a quick thing. I don't know if you ever go into a McDonald's or a fast food restaurant from time to time, and I noticed today that your color scheme for food and drink is orange.
It is my favorite color, and I just kind of, I find myself drawn to it.
You got your orange Gatorade and your goldfish cheddar goldfish snack, and, you're starting to look a little jaundiced, so I don't know if that would be what you're consuming or if your liver's just kind of about to lunch.
I'm going for the Oompa Loompa look today.
Oompa Loompa That's look, all. There you go. Well, speaking of McDonald's, for those not in the know, and in college I worked at Mickey D's back in Michigan, a land, air, and sea burger is a Big Mac, McChicken, and fish filet all slammed together. So there are these unlisted on the menu board items that if you know the code word or the secret handshake, you can go into some of these places and they will make you these bizarre multicaloric concoctions.
And is this universal? Is this like part of the secret training that you get when you go to McDonald's University?
In Chicago, you're right, there is such a place. I don't really know, but the land, air, and sea burger is, again, Big Mac, McChicken, and fish filet slammed together. A McGangbang is a McChicken sandwiched inside a double cheeseburger.
So if I call you up and tell you that I need bail because I just ordered a McGangbang,
yeah,
you better come pick me up,
yeah, because I just passed this on to you. But wait, there's more. A Monster Mac is 8 patties instead of 2. So
wow.
It's 8 all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onion on a sesame seed bun.
Wow. Only 6,000 calories.
That's it.
Can I get a Diet Coke with that?
No, but you can get a Neapolitan at McDonald's.
Oh.
Neapolitan is a shake made up of all 3 flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry.
So going back to the first one, the land, sea, and air.
Yes.
All I can say is that chickens that are raised for their meat from McDonald's, I don't think they fly. And of course, I'm going right back to Les Nessman and WKRP
yes.
on the Thanksgiving episode.
Oh yes, the flying turkeys.
Could fly. The humanity.
But they do use free range cod, just so you know.
Oh, okay. And they can fly.
They can indeed. All right, we got to take a quick break and kind of recompose ourselves and visit why the heck we're here today, because I'm not really sure at this point. Michael Hopley-Pierce is my co-host today in place of Carol Lawrence, who will return on Monday. It's the Pulse WTPL Food for Thought at 107.7. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7, The Pulse.
Into the final few moments. Horns are honking. We're on Elm Street outside, street level on the beautiful brick front of the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, downtown Manchester, sharing a little space today with our good friends, the computer and laptop experts and technology guys and gals, Groland Communications. We thank them not only for letting us share a little bit of their real estate, but for providing the juice for the broadcast today with our remote equipment. Food for Thought on the Pulse is brought to you by Mama McDonough's Irish Pub on Depot Street in Hillsborough and Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford and Londonderry, integrityfit.com. Headed by Rocco Boulay on our Healthy Mondays broadcast. He'll be along this coming Monday in the 12 o'clock hour. And our theme will continue with Randy Clemens and Steve Freeman, who are guys who know a lot about healthy eating and clean eating, so that we can deviate from our good intentions and have a few craft brews over the weekend, especially tomorrow. Summerfest is a showcase of excellent beers. A majority of the state brewers will be represented in this 4-hour event, or 5 if you opt for the VIP designation, which will cost you a little bit more. $40 for that. General admission is $30. Why should I do the VIP route, Michael?
Well, it'll definitely get you access to some folks that might be a little bit tougher to chat with once it gets more crowded. And I think there's likely to be beer available at the beginning that might not be available at the end.
Okay, makes good sense. And we also want to point out that there will be designated drivers for hire as well. If you feel that perhaps it wouldn't be responsible for you to drive or get behind the wheel after spending a few hours under the big tent at Summerfest, they got you covered on that, and that is the smart thing to do. $20 for a ride.
Or you could just sleep in a van down by the river.
Back in the old days at Caltech Fullerton? No, I forget.
Cal State Hayward.
Right. I won't remember it again 5 minutes from now. All right, so there's always interesting food news, and while we have you here, what's breaking on the news front as far as beer goes?
Well, as far as breaking news, I don't know that we have anything that's earth-shattering.
Or interesting news.
Interesting
conversational
news.
Conversational news.
Definitely conversational news. So I get links to all kinds of interesting beer articles sent to me from all kinds of cool people. And one of them that got sent to me was about a bear in a campground at Baker Lake, Washington, that fish and wildlife workers found this bear passed out on the lawn. And there were some clues as to what happened scattered around. There were empty cans of Rainier beer, dozens of empty cans. So it turned out that he ransacked a bunch of people's coolers and drank 36 cans of Rainier beer. But the funny thing, he passed right over the Busch beer that was in other people's coolers. And so clearly a very discerning palate on this bear. And
wow.
When he came to, they actually baited him into a trap, and they baited the trap with honey and a couple of open cans of Rainier beer.
And it worked.
And it worked. They relocated him to, I think, Manchester, actually.
Oh, I was thinking of the 12-step program, but I guess I could be wrong about that.
I don't know. He's a real bear when he doesn't have a drink.
Oh, bada-boom. All right, so it's funny you would have that story about a bear and beer. I have a bear and pie, which is actually fairly similar, although without any discernment with the various brands. This was a bear living the thug life to its fullest. That's what this says here, breaking into a Colorado bakery and downing 38 pies. Pretty close to your buddy the bear,
wow,
with his Rainier beer. According to Fox 31, a bear broke in through the back window and climbed into the Colorado Cherry Company, where he proceeded to gobble down 24 cherry pies, 14 apple pies, a sack of sugar, and baking cocoa.
Wow.
See, that's the kind of stuff we feed to my grandchild before we send him home.
And then he broke into a Rite Aid trying to get some Pepto-Bismol.
The wild bear literally tried to take off with some to-go boxes, but dropped them in front of the store on his way out. The clever bear even avoided security cameras somehow, which is unfortunate for him because the fridge in the camera's view had a ton of pies that he could have gobbled up. Of course, Colorado is known for its legalization of marijuana, but there was no evidence that the sneaky bear thief was intoxicated with a serious case of the munchies.
He did spend like 6 hours in front of the Xbox, though, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, exactly. And then he went back home and moved into his mom's basement. So, it had a happy ending, of course. So what other interesting beer conversation for our final 5 minutes or so?
Well, we talked about Anheuser-Busch and their interesting advertising, and they are definitely better at marketing beer than at making beer, in my opinion. I mean, they're very consistent in what they make, and they make exactly what they want to make.
And they have a certain audience that...
Brilliant.
Yes.
And one of their ads that they recently posted was about a bucket list for the summer, and take a summer class, learn how to do something. And so their class that they showed in this bit was people learning how to make beer, and they've got these people sitting around a table, and they've got a container of hops that they're sniffing, and a thing of malted barley that they're running through their fingers, and then they're passing a flight paddle, which, if you don't know, a flight paddle's kind of like a paddle, like you'd expect, and it's got little 4 or 5 ounce tasting glasses, 3, 4, 5 of them. You've probably seen them before. And it looks like they're all full of exactly the same beer. They're all full of Bud Light, which is what the ad was for. And there's, guys with beards are sniffing as it passes by them. And I'm just, once again, I'm wondering, okay, I cannot take this ad at the surface because it was obviously intended to be much more than that. So is this like a gentle mockery or just sort of an interesting piece of advertising? I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if they're going to be teaching beer classes in the near future. But it was certainly an interesting spin on their ongoing back and forth on craft. Because for a while, they ignored craft. And then they started buying craft breweries and closing them. And then they started trying to emulate craft breweries by coming out with their own crafty beers. And then they started buying craft breweries and really just empowering them and giving them distribution. And that's kind of where they are now. So it's interesting to see this ad where it seems like it definitely is mockery. And I'm not sure what the subtext is on it.
All right. So I, years ago, I took the Budweiser plant tour in Merrimack. I love food production TV shows. And so it was right in my wheelhouse to take a look at it. But at the end, of course, you go to the sampling room. And they've got many, many products, and of course, then they at the time they had their pretzels and other things. And I don't know if they still do this, but as I recall, you had your choice of 2 12-ounce beverages of your choice, be it one of their hard lemonades or whatever, any of the beverages that I think that you wanted that they had on tap right there. You could have 2 12-ounce pours. That seems like a lot to me for some people. I just wonder what their insurance bills must be like to cover any liability.
Yeah, well, they can't charge for it because they're a beverage manufacturer.
Yeah.
I think you probably do have to have some kind of an umbrella alcohol policy to cover whatever happens.
It seemed like a lot to me, though, and again, I don't know if that's how they still do it, and I'm pretty sure that's what it was 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, 4.5 to 5% beers would put the average human intoxicated by legal standards in New Hampshire.
Sure. Interesting. All right, so let's say that I want to tour a local brew house here in the Granite State. There are several dozen now, as you've told us today. Are there some that have regular, like the Smutty Nose? Do they have regular tours for people to come through?
They do, and they have a really cool facility. As we talked about on the show yesterday, they put a lot of time and money into making it not only functional but pretty and sustainable. So they absolutely do have brewery tours, but a lot of the local guys do too. I actually just saw Bill Herlicker from White Birch Brewing walking in. I don't know if he's coming on the show, but I saw him walk in with a couple of his beers about 30 seconds ago, and he's right down the street on Hooksett Ave. I don't know his address. He's around 1100 Hooksett Ave. And he certainly does tours, and he's got a really impressive facility that he's just upgraded recently with some very large, very high-tech equipment, can loaders and a canning machine and a big brew house and big fermenters. So you can actually go to the Granite State Brewers Association and find out who does tours, and most of them don't even need appointments.
Very cool. I need to meet Bill because he used to be a next-door neighbor of mine, but we had a huge piece of land between us, and I never met the guy in the years that I lived there, because obviously he was very busy building his business.
Well, I think you might just get the chance after we're done here.
All right, very cool. Michael Hopley-Pierce, our guy All Things Beer and the Tap Handle Show. How to find that on the internet quickly?
www.thetaphandleshow.com, iTunes, or Stitcher.
Fabulous job as a co-host. We'll have you back again another time to have some fun. And watch for Litherman's Limited sometime next year.
Litherman's.beer.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Hey, it's time for Kent Kale, Kale & Company next. Carol and I, Food for Thought. We'll see you Monday at noon. Have a great weekend.